And some, a couple other buddies of mine that got to serve at the same time, we went to Henry Ford for maybe a year. And then they opened up Washtenaw Community College. And when they opened that up, it was the greatest thing I ever saw in this city. People that you never thought would ever be trying to get better than they were ahead of you in line, going back to school to get another chance. And that was probably one of the greatest events in Ypsilanti, as far as I'm concerned, that it really got people back on their feet. Eastern was a teacher's college, and most people who graduated from high school didn't have, you had to have almost a B average or better to be considered to go to Eastern. So when they opened up the community college, here we come.
First, second, and third grade, I was the only black. Even after that, I was like the only black child in my particular classes. So I was used to being in that kind of environment, that kind of situation. I was a invisible person.
Interesting.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
I was an invisible person, and if I didn't learn how to read or write or whatever, nobody cared. When the black kids came to Ypsilanti High School, there were racial clashes all the time. You know, we had not learned how to get along with white people, and white people had not learned how to get along with black people, except for me. I had been there, and at times I felt like I was caught right in the middle of this whole big mess, you know. And I had problems with that because I was accused of being a whitey lover.
We came through the time where, you know, it was segregation because, you know, we were only allowed to live certain places. But as a young person, I never felt like I was being discriminated against. I guess I just, you know, sometimes you just don't know.
That's
what
you
don't know. That's what you know. Mm-hmm. And we lived in a neighborhood with Greeks and Mexicans. And that was just who our friends were. I remember when I went to Jones School, the teacher said, oh, we have a new girl in class. And Fran, I'm giving her to you. She was a Greek girl that lived down the street from where I lived. And she and I were friends forever. And I'd always tell her, you have to take care of me, remember? I was given to you to take care of, so. The only thing I think some of them did not really encourage you to work to your fullest benefit, to really stretch and think about college courses or things that were going to help you after you got out of school. So I think that's one of the things that I regret, even though we lived in a university town. It was like they had expectations that you would probably go and work in a kitchen someplace or mop floors or do that janitorial kind of work as opposed to having you stretch your imagination to really feel that you could do other things.
Well, Jones School had a pretty good sports program. They had a football team starting in the eighth grade. They had basketball teams. They had a mini league, if you want, with Slauson and Tappan Junior High Schools, where he went back and forth and played multiple sports, mostly football, basketball, and some baseball.
So which ones did you excel in?
None really. I was just fairly decent in most of them.
Okay.
I was a bookworm until the eighth grade. I spent some time living with my aunt, and she said that you will get all the halls. You're not going to stay in the halls and read books. So I actually went out and participated in every sport that Jones School had available.
my first remembrance when they started coming, we didn't have an indoor bathroom. So we almost all got beat up about this, we had to use the chamber bucket, you know, white bucket with the top on it and stuff. And so when the kids' cousins come from Detroit, that it would get full pretty fast, you know. And we were responsible for taking it down and dumping it. The outhouse was in the back. I still remember it was at the point, I guess, when it was just beginning to be able to get bathroom stuff on the poor side and whatever. So the chamber bucket would get almost full, and everybody, all the kids, we'd be up there whispering, who's gonna dump the bucket? And everybody, no, I'm not doing it anymore. So anyway, you would have to, because there was a stairway up there, and you'd have to take it downstairs and out the back door to the thing. Well, there was a little window at the top, almost at the top. And if we could get that window open, see, we could pour it. Well, we did that. We finally did that. We didn't get away with that one very long, no, only two or three times. And my grandfather was the one that, and we all got beat.
I met my wife going to Second Baptist Church. I went there, and I always considered what my mother told me when I left home, son, you go to church sometime. I know you ain't going every Sunday, but I kept it in mind. I did, and I joined Second Baptist Church, and I got very active. I started teaching Sunday school. I got in the Blue Crown Choir, and I became an usher. And that's how I met my wife. And after I got drafted and went in service, the young lady that I have today, she got my address and started writing me and told me how she enjoyed me and she really cared so much about me. And one day she wanted to be my wife.
Now,
and I couldn't
would
believe.
She tell me the same story?
She would tell you that.
Okay.
And so I did my time in service. When I came back, I was at church that Sunday, Second Baptist Church here in Ann Arbor. And I decided I'd go by and meet her mother. And her mother, and told her who I was. And she said, oh, you that Johnny Rush? I said, yes, ma'am. Oh, this little girl of mine, she said she just love you. Want to be, I said, be your wife. You can have her. Well, she was joking, I guess. And so we laughed. And she was very nice to me after she met me and seen what kind of person I was. Mm-hmm. And time passed. She found out my birthday. And I was a little Casanova back then because a lot of ladies was sought after me. And so got my size and went out and rented a machine and made me a shirt. And that's when I really started thinking, this girl really care about me. And my other girls that I was liking, they was just laughing, and I started taking her serious.
My dad was a painter for the Ypsilanti school system. He was the painter for the Ypsilanti school system. And my mother was a beautician. But before that, he was he worked in the bomber plant during the Second World War, and he was also an air raid warden during the Second World War.
There was a roller skating rink on the west side of Ypsilanti that did not allow black people to skate there. And he went out there and made arrangements for us, the children on the blacks on the south side of Ypsilanti, to have that skating rink on a Monday night. And so he made that available, made sure that we all got a chance to go out there and have fun at the skating rink. So, but through that skating experience, I became a very fancy skater. And so what we had was a carnival that would come to town around 4th of July. And I got hired by the carnival to put on a skating show. So they put out a big platform for me out there, and people would come and watch me do all kinds of fantasy things on skates.
You were very good.
Of course, you know the Dunbar Community Center. I always lived around that center. And I participated in everything that they offered, the clubs. I did sing with every group they had. We had a trio, we had sextets, we had choirs. And so that opened a lot of doors because they would ask, people in the community would ask us to sing different places. And so consequently, we had a lot of exposure. I was very grateful for being able to sing and to be a part of that because it just opened a door to a lot of things, and you were exposed to a lot of wonderful things that you might not have had an opportunity to see or to even be a part of.
A lot of stuff with neighborhood kids. Just kind of wandering around in the summertime. We spent swimming at in the Huron River. There used to be a beach at on Argo Drive and a canoe livery, and we would swim in that area from time school let out until the time school started again. It kept us out of mischief. In the summertime, you just took off in the morning. The only word was, when the street lights come on, you better be back home. As a kid coming up, and I had as customers most of the black families in Ann Arbor. You had black families living on Beek Street between Main and the bridge. Summer Street from Beeks up to Hiscock and a little bit beyond. You had black families on Wall Street. You had black families on Glen Ave and Catherine. So black families were scattered around Ann Arbor. Like I say, I knew most of them simply because I was a paperboy.
Right.
And I grew up in Ann Arbor, and it was an interesting experience.
Nothing from nothing, leave nothing. I think we've gotten away from the discipline of our young people. Now we're trying to befriend them too much and give them everything. You got to be the parent and give them some direction. I had a job, but we feel today that we did a good job because they turned out to be very good kids. We kept that unity and discipline. And been many days that I've had my daughters to call me up and they say, "Hi, Daddy, I just want to thank you." And I said, "Baby, what you think? You ain't got no birthday today. I didn't send you nothing." She said, "Daddy, this is the way you brought us up."
I believe that in travel and life experiences for kids is one of the best ways of teaching them, you know. So when I was at public housing, I had an opportunity to do some of that because the director would go along with it. So what I did was start a program for the kids and take them places. At the time, it was good because the police, I, you know, knew a lot of people in Ipsy, and at the police station, they had a police bus at the time, and Joe Craig was working there, and he volunteered to drive us. So I took them to museums and to, they wanted to go to Cedar Point, you know, that was their idea. I didn't like that one so well, but they wanted to do it, and I know a lot of them wouldn't get a chance to go to Cedar Point if we didn't do it. So Cedar Point, took them to Wayne State, to some of the plays, and just some little things, just to take them somewhere, give them exposure.
What we did was we went to around the city, and we did two things, basically. Well, we were the outreach department. So the bookmobile was the primary. And so you went to areas where they're either new or there was no other services there. So a lot of neighborhoods, like on the west side, you have small houses and stuff. So that was new families. And so that gave them access to mainstream services in the city. And we had satellite services like that at various retirement centers around the city. So that basically what happened was it gave the library real exposure and inform the public of what services are available. And we would always be able to say, if you need something, just call the reference desk. And whatever it is you need, if they have it, they'll send it out by us to you in the neighborhood. So that gave them basically hands-on access to the library without leaving their house except to pick it up.
Yeah, well, I'm a barber. I own and operate my own shop. And that's was my primary objective. I want to always have some control of my direction. You know, I saw my uncle, he used to be a barber. And that's what really dawned on me and gave me that inner will. And I made quite a sacrifice to be where I am today. A barber drove to Detroit 6 days a week.
That's where you went to get your
to get my barber license. And I worked at St. Joe Mercy Hospital as an orderly part-time. And I learned the discipline and whatever you have to do, my father always told me, success is about hard work, son, and sacrifice. And that reveals to me today, which is very true, just as true as I'm sitting here. And I went and got my barber license and served for my apprenticeship from John Easley here in Ann Arbor down on Ann Street. And then I went back and took my state board exam to be eligible to open my own shop. And I opened up my own shop for myself in 1961. A typical day for me is coming in and meeting a lot of the ordinary middle-aged customers. And the exchange of communication and ideas and direction is a good combination there. And it elevates you because you know these speak with the interest and the serious about it. And you look forward to that because you accommodate one another. And these are things I learned about every day that I have lived. We have to recognize that we all need one another. We all need one another. And that means, and that generates unity and direction and strength.
Went and took that training. And I worked as a surgical tech for 3 years in the operating room. And I loved it. It was just a wonderful experience. Another lovely gentleman came who became our director. And one day he came in the office and he said to me, Audrey, we don't know what will come up, but we do know that we would like to place you in a professional job in this department at some time. And I said, thank you. And they sort of made a job, and that's how I became a professional in HR.
In HR?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
We found a cemetery where they were supposedly buried at. That was a very interesting experience as well. And I can't remember exactly where it was, but it wasn't in Saline. It was sort of southwest of Saline. And what we found there was that at that time, the cemeteries would not allow black people to be buried in that cemetery. And so what they did with the black people was bury them in the field across the street from the cemetery. This is emotional for me because I still have a problem with that.
I can tell.
So there was some protesting that went on as a result of that type of arrangement down there. And so the populace finally decided to allow black people to be buried in the same cemetery with the white people. But their heads had to be facing in a different direction than the white people's heads. So they were all buried with their heads facing the street as opposed to whatever way they had them in there. So,
have you heard about Ainsworth Circle? Someone could tell you more. Do you, are you familiar with that?
We should talk about that.
Ainsworth Circle is an area on the south side that was built houses, nice houses, in this for white people. And what they did was they tried to make it so that there was only one entrance into this neighborhood in Ainsworth Circle, which was true. It was all white, and you wouldn't. Well, when I was a kid, we would go through Ainsworth Circle and raise havoc. And he said, what did you all do? I said, we would run through there, ring the doorbell, and run. And he just fell out. And I said, but that was irritating to the people who lived there. I never will forget one day. Some lady, we didn't get far enough. I guess we heard her talking about, we had woke up baby up. Oh, we had a lot of fun running through there and ringing doorbells.
We had a few people of color on the north side, and but basically on this, if you're on if you're basically east of or south of Harriet Street and on Hawkins Street, you went to Harriet Street Elementary, and that was like I said, that was when I learned things that I wouldn't have learned if I'd have went to another school, because they would not have showed the Tuskegee Airmen in their gymnasium to all the kids on the movie day, you know. So in order to make racism work, you got to keep everybody ignorant. Did anybody else contribute it? Because that way, they got no record, you know.
Ann Arbor is a beautiful city, but I've been very disappointed over the last few years since I've seen, lived here, to see Ann Arbor has regressed so much. Having came here when I was a young man and have seen what have transpired since I've been here, this invisible of blacks combination of business and helping one another and being able to help themselves. And that need to be confirmed and need to be talked about and let people see what is happening. And it's unfortunate, and we need to mention that. I look at all the high rise buildings, all the things the university is getting by with, and we working every day. And everybody talk about the university wouldn't be existing wasn't for the university. They ain't talking about the ordinary people who live here. I pay taxes twice a year. University ain't paying taxes.
As I can remember my mother going to the 10-cent store, Kresge's, up on campus. And I remember she came home. My mother was just a beautiful, sweet person. Never complained about anything. But she said, I was very upset today because I went to that counter and that girl walked all around me. She knew I was there to be served, but she acted like I didn't exist. There was the Friendly Corner up on 4th Avenue. It was owned by Jewish people, and a lot of people accused them of being communists, that they were part of the Communist Party. They couldn't just be people mm-hmm. because they were in a black neighborhood, mm-hmm. so they had to be communists. And of course, I was not allowed to go up on Ann Street, but I knew Ann Street, and of course, that's where people got their hair done on 4th Avenue. The barber shops were up there. The beer garden was there. The pool hall was there, where you could get your shoes shined, was there. And so Ann Street was the black business district.
Ann Arbor had an area, Ann Street area, that was a black business area. There were black-owned restaurants there. They're small, but black-owned bars. They also served food. I was brought up on the corner of Kingsley and Ashley. And it was kind of a mixed area because there were two white families across the street from us and a black family next to them, and there were three poor white families on Kingsley. But if you go around from Kingsley over to Ashley Street, you couldn't buy a house For the most part, I think Ann Arbor has been a very open, especially after the 50s and 60s. It's become more and more open. I like Ann Arbor. I doubt if there's any place else I really want to live. Ann Arbor's just strategically located for me. If I want to go to Detroit, see plays and that kind of thing, it's available from Ann Arbor. I just like Ann Arbor.
I would say get off the computer and get outside and let the air blow on you.
Education, education, education. Never stop.
Ain't nothing wrong with just facing the truth. And we need to talk about these things. And that's why I said, therefore we need one another. Okay, who you are.
Get an education. Education doesn't have to be university or college or a formal education. Learn a skill. There's nothing wrong with being a plumber or a carpenter, a bricklayer. We need people like that.
You want to be an original. You want to be authentic. You want to always do the best that you can and not accept anything else that is less than that.